15 to 20 million.
Jump out.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Good morning, and welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. And I want to tell you, it's hard to believe we are already on the last Wednesday of January the 28th. And we're continuing with our theme of the year, Grow America's Economy. Well, I'm going to ask, as always, that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in here on 860 if they live in Philadelphia in the tri-state area. If they are outside the area, they can listen from anywhere in the USA or anywhere in the world simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Well, last week, we continued our discussion on restoring the trades and industrial arts programs in America's schools, and we had a very special guest, Justin Friend, and I want to thank Rich Logis for bringing Justin to our broadcast, and my special thanks to Rich Logis, Mark Andel, and Larkin Connolly for welcoming Justin Friend to American Workers Radio. I'm sure that all of our listeners had an opportunity to hear what can be done by a young person if the person has the energy and wants to do something positive in their life. And also, I would like to say that if you did not hear last week's broadcast, you can go on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Anytime link, and you can go right to last week's broadcast, where you will see that Justin's name is listed. Well, all of our talk about growing jobs in America and also talking about the trades and industrial arts, it's really helped us unite a lot of our supporters. But convincing the elected officials and school boards to do what America needs is going to be a real challenge, because the way things are is the easy way out. But as we continue to talk about the restoration of the trades and industrial arts programs in our schools, it's really urgent for parents and also grandparents to speak up in behalf of their children and grandchildren to the elected officials, because I don't think that many of them understand the damage that has been done in America with the loss of the vocational education programs. And by the way, there are more young people ready and able to give these programs a try, but they don't have access to it. A lot of people say, well, I'm not going to be a doctor or a lawyer or a scientist. What else do I have to do? And I sincerely believe, Larkin, that if we had more people in the trades, the vocational arts programs, we would definitely, and I mean definitely, have less unemployment in the country and less dropout rates in our schools.
And I think the huge point here is the fact that in the absence of getting a professional degree, an attorney, an accountant, a doctor, we graduate students that are who have just been through 4 years of irrelevant education, and they come out of high school just totally unprepared. You know, and I don't mean the lion's share, but I'm talking about a lot of our urban school districts where the graduation rate is sub 50%, and it's just you know, it's broken. The system is broken, and the problem is that all of the politicians last week's State of the Union address and the inauguration last week, they talked about, you know, pouring money into education, and I don't think money is the problem. It might be one of them, because they've had to cut so many services, but money isn't the problem. It's a structure. The system is broken.
Maybe we're going to have to return to the idea of asking our young people, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Well, yes, and for that matter, I have invited a guest on today, who is on the line right now, Bruce Bassett Powell, who is Bruce is a friend a mentor. I've known him for many, many, many years. He is a Brit. He has taught me single-handedly that the British are a pretty intelligent group of people. And he and I have had lengthy conversations in the past about the British educational system, you know, the educational system in Europe and how it differs from America, and how this country can go from first in math and science to 36th and 48th. And what is the root of that problem? Bruce has been here in America for quite a while, and considers himself an American now, but with British heritage. Welcome to the program, Bruce.
Hello. Thanks a lot.
And Bruce, I want you to know you're on the phone with Larkin Connolly, as well as Mark Andel, and Rich Loges, and myself.
So I wanted to start, Bruce, by asking, you and I have had these conversations. Usually one of us is holding up the other against an oaken bar somewhere, but
that's what makes them interesting.
That's what makes the conversation interesting, exactly. And I was wondering if you could review the fundamentals. We have said on this program that we think secondary school ought to go until about 10th grade, 15, 16 years old, and that at that point, some consideration ought to be given to the direction that student is going in, whether it's skilled labor or whether it's a professional degree. And at that point, they spend an awful lot of time as an apprentice, as well as continuing their education, or they move on to a higher education. Is that basically the way it is in England?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same way, except that much fewer school leavers go to university or college, as you call it in the States, than Americans do. I think right now it's 25%, roughly, whereas when I left school it was less than 5%. I mean, there was absolutely no question of me going, and never even crossed my mind or anybody else's around me. And I should explain that I went to a very different kind of school than the English state school system. I went to a very private school that was called a public school, because back in Henry II's time in the 12th century, it in fact was a public school. However, schools in England are called state schools, comprehensive schools, but not public schools. But in England, you only have to go to school from the primary education through what would be the 10th grade here, which in England is the fourth form, 16 years old, and then you don't have to stay in school anymore. Obviously, 75% of English school leavers leave at 16. So what do they do?
At 16, which we would call probably the 10th grade in this country.
10th grade, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I brought up two boys in the American school system, and I was never able to get the grades right, and I'm still not. And somebody comes and says, oh, my child's a sixth grader. I still have no idea what they're talking about. They have to tell me. I say, I understand that. What is their actual age? Oh, he's seven. Oh, okay. in England, we have forms, not grades. So we have the first form, second form, third form, fourth form. There used to be a fifth, but now there's a lower sixth and an upper sixth. And when you talk about 12th graders, we talk about sixth formers. That's the only difference. But
so at that age, as sixth formers, they sit down, where do they go? I mean, you're saying at that point they're allowed out.
When I said 75% of the kids leave in six, that's not true. About 50% leave at 16, and there's another 25% that leave at 17 and 18 years old, which is the year 13, upper sixth. And we have a series of exams that are taken at the 15, 16 year, which is called the GCSE, which is the General Certificate of Secondary Education. And that's and you go by subjects. So if you get a pass in maths, English, French, geography and history, that's known as five O levels, because they're called O levels. And if you go in the sixth form, if you get two A levels, that's usually enough that's equal to going to college in the United States in terms of employment. You know, you'll see it in adverts, must have five A's and five O's and two A's. Well, that means they haven't been to college. And I think that's one of the main differences between the UK and much of Europe with the US is that college is generally reserved for people who, even though it's going up very substantially in the UK and all over Europe, it's still reserved for people who want to use their higher education in their work rather than just get it to get a job. Because by that stage, even though you might have five O's and two A's, it doesn't guarantee you a job with a high-paying salary any more than if you left school in the 11th grade or whatever. The banks, for instance, and I remember this even when I was at school, they start coming into the school when you're 18 years old, 17, 18 years old, and recruiting you to go and work for organizations like banks and companies and lawyers. We don't have, until recently, we didn't even have any law colleges in England. You join a law firm at the age of 19, and you take your bar, you read for your bar during that period and work for the firm at the same time as an article clerk, and you take your bar bar exam while you're at the firm. Same thing with accounting. You join an accounting company at 19 as an article clerk, and then you take your exams during. So a lot of that is why people don't go to college.
So one learns to be. What you're saying, Bruce, is that one learns to be an attorney on the job.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's been like there are law colleges now in England, which I guess mix the thing up a bit. But for the most part, and I just was looking this up just now, most lawyers in England have started at the firm and worked their way through it. They take their bar exam after about three, four years at the firm.
So what if I wanted to become a welder? What if I decided at age 15 or 16 that I wanted to be a welder?
Well, the apprenticeships programs in England are there. A lot of people will tell you that they're failures, and we have the same problems as the U.S. in terms of young kids leaving school, not knowing what to do, and there are there's stuff available to be welders. There are much more trade unions are still involved in England, and when you join an apprenticeship, they're often sponsored, by the welders' union or the engineering unions, and working hand in hand with what you would call community colleges, which are actually apprentice schools. And I think that they're there, but they're not. For instance, in Germany, it's sort of almost compulsory that when you leave school at 16, you go to the apprentice school, which is one of the reasons why their streets are ahead of everybody in industrial engineering and things like that. So If I think that, my criticism of the American school system is I'm convinced that 75% of the people who go to college are wasting everybody's money, including their own, and the government's, and anybody else's. I think that they come out and they can't even speak English.
it's amazing.
I'm sorry, I think the where the American system fails compared to Europe is in the secondary education, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th grade. They learn nothing. My boys learn nothing in school, as far as I'm concerned. And in the UK and in and I'm saying the UK, but the UK isn't ranked that high up the scale, not where Germany, Japan, and all those other, which have a cultural aspect to education that neither the British nor the Americans have.
So in Germany, what? If I want to be a car designer at 16 or 17 years old, I'm going to be hired by Mercedes-Benz or BMW, and they're going to take me under their wing, put me in a plant, and train me how to build cars.
And you may work for them for the rest of your life.
Very interesting. Wow. Rich, what would you like to ask Bruce?
Bruce, thanks for being on. Welcome. Good to have you back on here. So let me ask you this, Bruce. I'm going to try to ask this question correctly, and it's going to sound broad, so forgive me if it's not as specific as it needs to be. So what if I want to get into a business that is doing those things? I'm an entrepreneur. I want to build things. I want to start up a food business, a clothing business, whatever business it is.
In the UK?
Is the climate right now in England favorable for that?
Yes.
Indifferent to that?
I remember I've lived here 40 years, so I'm not always au fait with England, but certainly getting into your own business in the UK is not really more difficult than getting into your own business in the United States. They don't call it the British dream. Everybody would kind of laugh at that, but it's just that you have when you're 16, 17 years old and you join a company, you've got all the tools of business in your hand for the most part. By the time you're 20, you've never been to business school. Now, again, we have business schools in England now, which we never used to have. And we've got one of the finest business universities in the world, which is the London School of Economics, which Mick Jagger went to. the opportunities are there. There's more regulation in England for certain, and there's more cost in getting into business, which is slightly more prohibitive. But you've got people from France who can't start a business in France going across to England and starting them in the UK. You have a French company wanting to start a taxi company in France. They had absolutely no way because of regulations. They went to England and they started a French taxi company in Britain from where they organize it. Figure that one out. And they're doing superbly well. So, the British and the American environment for getting into your own business is pretty good. And right now, the British economy is the fastest growing and most robust in Europe by miles. So there's something to be said for that. But I do think that when it comes to skill, I live in a little town called Victoria down here in Texas, which has got huge numbers of oil and exploration and, there's fracking. We're right in the middle of it. And, of course, it's in a slightly wobbly state now with the oil being where it is, pricing. But you can't get a welder. If you have a garage and you need a welding done, it's all hell trying to find one. Because nobody studies these trades anymore. It's the same with a lot of skill trades, especially out in the rural areas where you just can't find them. I suppose if you're smart enough to become a welder, you move up to Houston. But it's even tough to get a welder in Houston. And I believe it's tough all over the country to get a trade welder.
And I can recount a story 25 years ago. I was on a due diligence mission for an oil company out of Houston that I was working for. And we were considering buying a company in Switzerland. And my job was to fly over to Switzerland on the German, French, and Italian side and visit these properties that were gas stations, garagists, as they called them over there. And they were attached to their home. The businesses were actually the first floor of their home. They had a room where you could drive in and where they worked on cars, and one little silly gas pump out front on the curb that you could pull up to and buy gasoline from. But I always spent my due diligence in the first on the second floor in the living room of the family. And there was the grandfather, the father, and the two sons, one 17 and one 14, all four of them downstairs working in the garage, the two boys learning their trade, learning their family business so that they could carry on in that very property. So there's social issues as well as, you know, financial and economic issues at work here. But there's an awful lot to be said, at least in Switzerland, where my experience is on that side, of, you know, the 16-year-old son does what his father is doing, and he follows in his footsteps, unless he wants to become a doctor, which I think nobody would, you know, be opposed to. But there's an awful lot of that, you know, continuing education through the family and through the generations.
That's very European, Larkin.
Yes.
Very European.
Right.
You know, Bruce, on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, there is a story. It's linked. It's a welder from Texas, Justin Friend, who's earning $140,000 a year by being a great candidate for being probably the best welder in Texas in the future. But if I'd like to bring attention to that article that's linked right on the front page. Just go down underneath, contact your local officials, and you'll see the article. It's well done. Read it over. And this is our whole purpose is to try to get some of the people to speak up to their elected officials and their school boards to get our trades programs back. And Mark Andel has been a great influence to many people. People, you know, didn't think about the trades that much over the last 15, 20 years in America. And now it's really hurt people in a big way. In fact, if more of our students were graduating from America's schools and able to enter the job market with a variety of skills, we wouldn't have the type of outsourcing we've been going through.
Well, you're right. The reason that guy earns $140,000 a year is because he probably doesn't have any competition.
And I was going to say to Mark Andel, imagine, Mark, they can't find a welder in Texas. Imagine.
Right. You know, Bruce, how are you doing today? I don't know if you know, Bruce, but I own General Welding and Fabricating here, so we run about 35 welders right now. But like you said, in Texas, you can't find a welder. You know, I can't find a welder. We're continually looking. We'll hire, you know, three. We lose two for other reasons. It's very, very difficult. And I love what you said, you know, with Europe and UK and British, how they train. I learned a lot from my father, and then you pass it on. Of course, I had passion for it. But I do like what you said with college, too. 75% of the kids probably wasting their own money. It's probably true because, you know, when they get out, there's not a job for it. They don't really like it. I know 9 out of 10 friends that did that. But go ahead.
When I left England, I was working for a printing company in Liverpool. And this was back in 1973, 74. And we had one whole building full of apprentices. The management was involved, the union was involved, and the Liverpool City was involved all together. And there are about 40 or 50 young men, 16, 17, 18, all learning the printing machinery trade. I'm sure that some of them are still in that business when they're not still at Eric Benrose, but they might be. Still in the printing business, because that is a, you know, it's a trade. They join the union and, you know, whatever. From that point of view, unions are good.
And you learn the trade. You learn printing from the inside out. I mean,
and
there's nothing that says that that you can't, you know, become a salesman or become a sales manager or become the chairman of the board of that printing agency as you grow and your talents become more obvious.
And Larkin, when I went to Wigwam Socks in Sheboygan, Wisconsin a couple of years ago, and Bob Chesbro, third generation owner, they've got sewing machines now. They have 300 employees now. You have to really learn. You could be mechanical, but you've got to go there and learn these machines if you've seen them. You know, they can stitch, 200 different stitches, or a sock might have, 200 stitches an hour. It's incredible what these machines can do. But you've got to be trained as an apprentice, and that's their problem. The average age is 58 to 62. Nobody spent the time in that company. So major problem coming up. But, you know, you specifically had to learn from that company is my point.
Well, that's so very true. Well, Bruce Bassett Powell, dear friend of mine, thank you very much for your insight.
It's a pleasure.
Bruce and I oftentimes compare the American way, which we are very patriotic and proud of, and Bruce somewhat tries to defend the English monarchy, which I, by the way, I absolutely enjoy watching. I love the monarchy.
When somebody ever asks if I'm a conservative, I always say, I'm a monarchist. What does that tell you?
Well, Bruce, we call it Clinton versus Bush here. Bruce,
yeah, so. That's our monarchy are the Bushes and the Clintons.
Now, Bruce, I want to ask you something before you go.
Okay.
If you had it to do all over again and your sons were in school, what kind of programming would you like to see in the schools available to them to make them more successful?
I think that they have to learn more at the high school level. I was absolutely appalled by what the curriculum was. It was, you know, I was doing maths that they were doing when I say math, I don't go to math here, but when I was 14, 15 years old, and they weren't even doing by the time they were 17 or 18. And they don't teach them any history, and they don't teach them anything. You know, social sciences was a complete bust. I mean, they just don't teach them anything. I remember going to Gettysburg with my oldest son and the whole school, Conestoga School, which Larkin will know well. And one of the teachers I was having lunch with there said, I think that history is a complete waste of time in the school system. And there's a teacher that said that to me, and that sort of marked my thinking.
Yeah, that's pretty.
And I just, you know, my sister urged me to go to college, and when I tried to go to Penn State, they said because of my education, my five O-levels, and actually I had three A-levels, they said, we give you, 2 years credit.
Wow.
Look at that.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Well, I have to, you know, for not going through the college system and high school and graduation and all the, and for not, which really kind of irks me, because I graduated from college with $80,000 worth of debt. How dare you come over here from England without carrying at least 120,000 pounds of debt? that's not right for some odd reason. But
I did, but it fell out of my pocket at Philadelphia Airport.
Well, Bruce, thank you very much. Very, very enlightening. We will have you on again, but as usual, the conversation is enlightening. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bruce.
Gentlemen, I'm going to have to take a little break just to acknowledge a few of our great sponsors briefly today, as they will be announced every day this week and this weekend. Thanks to Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, to Serena's Auto Body Shop, serving Philadelphia and Montgomeryville, Pennsylvania, to the Net Cost Market, located in Northeast Philadelphia, to the PRCUA and their president, Mr. Joseph Drobot, and Michael Steinman, attorney at law, as well as Dr. Eva Machak and her two dental offices in Philadelphia. Also, the Royal Cracovia, remember, is located at 510 Whitehorse Pike South in Magnolia, New Jersey. A great menu, a great place for all sorts of banquets and special events, wedding receptions, rehearsal dinners, anniversaries, and so much more. For more information, give them a call at 856-282-3300 or check them out on the internet at royalcracovia.com. And also, I would like to note that Polka Deli is located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue. And if you're planning any type of travel, remember the Polish American Travel Service. When you're out shopping, look for Giorgio Foods, a symbol of quality since 1928. And Mr. Martin Bednarek wants to thank everyone for supporting American made, and remind you that Washington Savings Bank, Kazimierz Wielki, has 5 locations in Philadelphia to serve you. And Yolanda Konopatska DeCipio, attorney at law, represents clients in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. All of our advertisers are also listed on the front page of our newsletter. And also best wishes to you and yours from Karen Janad from State Farm Insurance and Dr. Wojciech Zin and all of the staff and dentists there at Everest Dental, 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. And best wishes also from Mr. Frank Spula and everyone from the Polish National Alliance, America's largest national life insurance organization with representatives across the USA. And now that I'm on the subject, may I ask that you go to the front page of American Workers Radio, where you will find links to Mark Andel, as well as our friends at Gas Buddy, AmeriLoop, and Mike Sessions, and his Go4USA app is up there as well. Check him out by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. And Mark Andel, a very faithful supporter of American Made, wants to remind you that the American Made store offers 100% of everything made, including the packaging and everything else, made here in the USA. Check him out at madeinamericastore.com or go on the front page of American Workers Radio and just click on Mark's photo. I want to thank Henry Chaplinsky, our engineer, for doing a great job all the time. He's always kind of busy. He's got 4 kids, and we try to keep him happy over here. I know that Larkin is always smiling and having a good time. I'm sure that Mark is on the other end also doing his thing. And Rich, thank you, Rich, for getting Justin Friend as our guest last week, and also Larkin for getting Bruce on today. It's very interesting. Isn't it unbelievable how we can learn how other countries are promoting education and ours just seem to be dwelling along?
You know, the one thing Bruce has taught me through our friendship of 40 years is that as Americans, we're pretty provincial. And by that, I mean we are the biggest, we're the strongest, we're the fastest, pretty much the richest. All of those things are being challenged now in our generation. But we happen to know that, and every once in a while we become a little overbearing, especially, you know, to a Brit who Bruce used to say to me all the time, and he started 3 businesses in this country. And one was a huge import business with a wicker import-export business. And he used to, I would say to him, Bruce, you're living the American dream. And he said, how dare you? This dream is not just American. This is a worldwide dream. There are people in Switzerland and Italy and France and Scotland and Ireland that have done the very same thing. It's not the American dream. It is the human dream. It is the economic dream.
Larkin, what made, and Rich, I'm going to ask you to give your opinion, and also Mark, what made this diminish in America, that dream?
Well, we got lazy. It's just fundamentally that simple.
Did you think people just got, well, we are the biggest and the best, and so we can't be bothered?
And we still are. We're not the smartest anymore, unfortunately. And that's the kind of long-term malady that will have a major effect on this country. If we don't turn that around pretty quickly, you can't be the dumbest and the fastest and smartest and quickest at the same time. You really, really can't. And while it doesn't take its toll immediately up front, it's starting to really hurt this country to be, you know, 38th in math and 42nd in science. That just it doesn't become us. And those problems were created by, again, I go back to the lack of parenting, to children being mollycoddled their entire life and spoon-fed. It goes back to the politicians. It goes back to the school boards. It goes back to the teachers. It goes back to the unions. Everybody became so ingrained in getting what they wanted for themselves that they forgot about the system and they forgot about how it was going to play out 10 years from now.
Yes, and making sure that people know how to stand on their own. You know, Bruce mentioned something which was very interesting to me. The people in England are getting hands-on experience. They're going to the print shops.
At 16 years old.
So that's why I keep saying hands-on experience is so important for our young people today in the schools where they're impressioned. You know, they're very impressioned oriented by going. They can't go to a library. In fact, I heard a report which was unbelievable. Many of the libraries are downsizing now because most people are on the internet. So we have to make accommodations for the things that we need. We need more people who are electricians. We need professionals in heating and air conditioning. We need welders. We need designers. I don't like the idea. I was on a train yesterday to Harrisburg, and I want to tell you I was furious because on the door of the train, it says the train was made in Japan.
So, yeah, that really hurts. You know, there's one of the things that I would tag on to the answer that I gave you before you go to Mark and Rich is one of my favorite quotes comes from Ben Franklin, and I think it's so true today it's not even funny. And that is, not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers.
Very well said.
That's Ben Franklin.
Oh, very well said by Franklin. Oh, he's an inspiration. He did so many things in his life and gave so many examples. But we as leaders, we're trying to do this through our radio broadcast, through our programming. We're trying to cheer people up, make them motivated to call political leaders, call family and friends to speak up. If we don't get people back into lifelong vocational skills, I don't know what's going to happen. Well, Rich, I want to say, what did you think of this interview with Bruce today?
Yeah, I always welcome, Michael, perspectives from other places. Me and my wife's from being from Poland, and I've got to say, speaking of my wife, I need to shout out, today's her birthday, as Larkin likes to say.
She's 19?
I married up.
You so, definitely married up.
Yep. Tell her we said 100 lat. That means may she live 100 years. Why 100? Go 200 lat, 200.
I won't even try to spell or pronounce that, Michael, but I'll tell her thank you. When she listens, she's going to hear it. My birthday, FYI, is in 2 days, so I'm going to. My wish, though, Michael, I'll tell you what my birthday wish is. Happy birthday to my wife. Here's my wish. My wish is that Larkin, I heard you say before about what makes us so unique, and I've always thought, and you're absolutely right, another thing I would add to that is something I talk about a lot, which is I think maybe our greatest strength, it's not the ability to blow the world up a million times over, it's none of those things, it's the fact that we as a nation can fix our flaws better than anywhere else in the world. I really, really believe that, Michael, and my wish is I think the first step, and it's a humongous step, to fixing our flaws. Because not everything is flawed, but we've got some serious, serious problems that, for all things considered, guys, yeah, we shouldn't have them. But we've got them, and now we need to deal with them. And I think, Michael, the first step on this path is that Americans collectively, they need to know more about why it is that we have these problems. I think the biggest problem in this country, guys, and I've said it before, I'm going to keep saying it until evidence suggests otherwise, it's really how little we know. We know a lot about mostly useless stuff. The media, even the politicians, we're never want for useless stuff. And look, I'm like everyone else. I like to be entertained also, but we're rewriting the book on how to be entertained and ignorant. We are not a dumb country. We choose to not know things. And if you ask any politician, Michael, you ask any parent in a school district, Larkin, about anything, Mark, you ask anyone in a trade about things, and chances are, about these issues, you're going to hear a lot of people that they don't know what's going on. They don't know what it is that's occurring. And you can't fix anything without knowing what the roots of the problem are, and what your options are in front of you. And Larkin, you know, the thing is this. I think part of not knowing is also a great, great resistance to really talking about things honestly. Whether it's cases like we saw in Ferguson, where it expanded the conversation about economic inequality and education. Larkin, those people that you cited who aren't graduating high school, do you know where they are? They're in places like Ferguson. That's where they are. It expanded that. Whether we're talking about the Middle East, whether we're talking about problems, Michael, with our jobs, any of those things, we have resisted really looking in the mirror and talking honestly about these things. And this is why when we look to elected officials in particular, we need to look to people that we feel really can lead. It's not always about agreeing and disagreeing. We're much closer, I believe, in this country. If I ever run for office, the premise of my campaign is going to be we're a lot closer on these important issues than we are farther apart. And again, Michael, there's no stat or statistic or study that's going to convince me otherwise.
I agree. And, you know, as I was listening to you, I would like to know one thing. Why were the trades and all the industrial arts programs downsized in America a year ago? I'd like to know.
They went to China?
No. Why did our leaders not take a stand? We can't allow that to happen.
Because they were bribed by the companies outsourcing to pass legislation that aided and abetted them.
Follow the cash. Follow the dollar.
It's really that simple, Michael. It really is. I mean, Bruce is on and Bruce being British, I got to say, the British have done three things great in their history: imperialism, rock and roll, and stout. So the British, they know. Okay?
Now, Mark, what, in your area, how were the industrial arts and the trades 25 years ago?
Yeah, now, we were very strong. I'd like to go back when you said to Larkin, you know, what happened in American Dream, and I think, Larkin, you're right. You know, America got lazy and selfish, basically, and everybody's to blame. But you need want, and I think, you know, that want is what we need in that hunger, and it is difficult, but I think it's still there. But, Mike, on the, you know, if you go back 25 years, if I go back to the 80s, I was in ninth grade, 81. We had electronics, wood shop, metal shop. You had power mechanics, they called it, in high school. So you signed up for these to get your credit. So
now, are they still available in those high schools?
No. And I, you know, back then, like in the late 80s, I signed a petition with the top, Ralph Cheney, was electronics teacher and a lot of the industrial arts teacher. He started that campaign way back then to fight to keep them in the schools. He lost. He stopped at one of my store events, and I haven't seen him in, of course, years, and he was proud of what we were doing. But he fought the fight early off. He knew they were going to try to take them out of the schools, and they did. And that's a big issue, Mike. I mean, once they left the schools, that's where you start, you know, you stopped exposing them. The children at 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, I thought it was great. You learned how to make we molded a bottle opener. We shaped a hammer. We did electronics. You took all types of things, but you made a PC board. All different types of things, but it exposed you to it. Wood class, you know, you did your wood cabinets. Very interesting. And then you thought, hey, I might want to get into that. Right?
Now, Mark, replace those subjects with? That they got rid of the trades and industrial arts. What were the children filling their time with?
Yeah, the only thing they've got similar they call technology, and my daughter, again, is in seventh grade in a public school now. Technology, you touch on a little bit of everything. They had a class called Life Skills, and we always talk about a lot of these kids, and it's just true, very smart, come out of school but can't fill out a check or you know, run a checkbook. Now, I heard they were going to take them, that Life Skills class and technology, out either this year or next year because they're cutting budgets, which raises the hair on you. These are the things you need more of, and they're talking about cutting them. Even the guidance counselor I talked to at our school, well, my daughter, she was frustrated because they're teaching for the state tests and the teachers can't teach, you know, the standard things we hear.
So, you know, I have two comments, Mark, both for you. In the eighth grade, I built a birdhouse. The birds could get in, but they couldn't get out. So I knew right away I wasn't a carpenter. It really was kind of amazing. My father,
remember it.
He wanted to submit it to the Carnegie Museum.
Where'd all the birds in the neighborhood
go? Yeah, right. They're stuck in Larkin's birdhouse. So, you know, and the other thing is they're cutting these life science courses. What's going up? I mean, they have the same amount of money. They're not losing money. I mean, you know, in other words, the state senate isn't coming and saying, okay, we have to whack $15 million out of your budget. They have the same amount of money. So what's changing that they have to cut expenses? Teachers' salaries going way up? Are the heating bills higher? I don't,
you know, another thing, Larkin, our lottery for New York State is supposed to, you know, fund a part of the school costs, the education costs. And I always question, like you said, and I know the lottery, I remember it was $80 million a week just for scratch-off tickets because we sell lottery at the store, and I fell over. How much do you make? And we get that percentage. But like you said, why are they cutting these two things? To me, they always go at the heartstrings. But this is the disconnect we have between the educators who are making the decisions and businesses and what we need in real life. It's a major disconnect.
Right. So what you're saying, Mark, is that the leaders of the day at the school boards and the national or local elected leaders decided that boys and girls don't need any more hands-on experience. Hands-on experience is everything. Would you say that, Mark?
Yep.
Could you learn as much from a computer as you could with hands-on experience?
Absolutely. It's lost. Like I talked to these old industrial arts teachers and whatnot. Kids can't even hold a hammer. Their hand physically can't hold a hammer. They've never had it in their hand. It's a major problem. I always said if you're going to be a doctor, no matter what you're going to be, you're going to need to fix your door handle at home or something. I mean, you should know the basic tools. That's where them programs were awesome for, and also it might expose you and say, hey, I want to get into that. But I think, Larkin, you said the sophomore or ninth or tenth grade, you should be asking this to the kids and giving them some tests or examples or however we can expose it to them. If it is a class that shows you all these different items, somehow we got to spark their interest.
Well, you know, Larkin, I'm going to try to do something in the next couple months. Maybe you can help me. I'd like to get in touch with some of the teachers who are part of the trades in some of the schools that are offering the trades and see what they feel about expanding them back into the regular junior high and high schools in our communities.
And they're going to tell you, they don't have the money. And that might be the case right now because it's not a priority. That's the problem. The priority is to educate the children. And what they don't get is this is all part of the educational experience. It is. And you know, we used to have a recreation half hour in when I was in high school. It was actually 30 minutes before the lunch period. Sometimes it was 45 minutes, whatever. But we used to actually have a square in the high school, and we would go out there and stand around and look at each other. And you know, cliques started to form, friends started to form. But guess what? You learned how to socialize. You learned how to talk to the guy across the way and how to carry on. And, you know, as my friend says, he taught his grandson how to ask a girl out to a dance. And when he asked him how it went, you know, his grandson said, I don't know, she hasn't tweeted me back yet. So, you know, we've given up on social skills. We don't make children read anymore. It's,
you know, we're bringing in so many important points. My question is, where are really America's leaders? And by the way, the businesses also play a part in this. Why can't they ask for some of their tax dollars to be put into apprentice programs within high schools and junior high schools? What do you say to that, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if we can get more involved, I think your question really, Mike, I mean, we're talking about it. We're stirring it up. We know there's welder shortage, plumbers. How do we get the schools to change? I mean, how do we get the parents to make change? I think, like, the customer has power. I say, you know, at the store, buy American. But the teacher has to listen to the parent, or the parent has to bring it up. I'm not sure how we make that happen. And in our system with the teachers being ran now and being told what to do, and they can't really teach because they're teaching through for the three exams for the state. I'm not sure. What do you guys think? How do we actually, you know, where's the first, this is the start of this? How do we get them to change?
Well, you know, Bruce made the perfect comment, and I agree with him 150% because I took three children through high school and all three of them through college. And I found high school, I very much agree with Bruce. I found high school and the late grade school years to be irrelevant. I thought the curriculum was awful. It wasn't challenging. It wasn't the slightest bit provocative. It was just dumb, kind of. I don't even know how to explain it. And kids could opt out of science. Kids could opt out of math. I mean, it was just you know ridiculous. The curriculum needs to be revisited, and it's not relevant.
By the time we get ready for next week's broadcast, I hope we'll be able to talk about a few more things where I think we're going to motivate people to really do this.
This is Mayor Pulaski from the great city of Allentown, Pennsylvania. You are tuned in to American Workers Radio on 860 AM.
Lubemaster Auto is located at 6120 Frankfort Avenue, right next to the Burger King, and invites you to bring your car, truck, or SUV in today for any auto repairs that you may need. From oil changes to brake jobs, tires, inspections, and admissions, they do it all. They are open from Monday to Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m., and closed on Sunday. They would like to offer 10% off of any service with the mention of this ad. Call them today at 215-535-5322. Download the Go4USA mobile app from the iTunes Store today. This is an online database which helps you pinpoint where to purchase American-made goods and allows consumers to upload product information simply by scanning the UPC code. Consumers eager to help create American jobs by searching for and buying U.S.-made products and services now have what they need in the palm of their hand. These platforms will access the same product, manufacturer, and retailer information available today and which continues to grow from the dedicated efforts of the Mobile Army. Download this great app from the App Store today and help us help each other. Buying American made keeps American jobs.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, before we get back to the broadcast, I would like to just give you a little commentary of what we've been trying to do in the last few weeks. We've been talking about getting more people, young people especially, ready and able to fill the jobs needed by modern industries of today before they graduate from high school. America should have never lost so many jobs to outsourcing, and now America's industries are suffering, our young people are unemployed, and it all has to come to some sort of an end. In fact, if there were more students graduating from America's schools ready to enter the job market, and I mean ready to enter it, with all sorts of job skills, modern industries in America would have never been lost, and we'd find more people in employment opportunities and more people wanting to get into those job markets. The loss of jobs and job skills simply shows us that it's urgent to expose America's junior high and high school students to the types of job skills needed by modern day American industries. As Mark understands, Larkin Connolly understands, we all agree, Rich Loges has made it very clear that without a good education, no one is going to go anywhere. However, with a hands-on experience with the types of jobs needed for today's industries, more young people would be prepared to move forward for careers of their choice. And today, the old expression is, what do you want to do when you're going to be an adult? What do you do when you want to be grown up? Well, this is the time we change that question back to the way it used to be. What do you want to do when you grow up and be an adult? From my contacts with parents, I see that many of them wanted the best for their children, but in doing that, they didn't expose them to both academic courses and lifelong vocational skills, which are really needed by today's private industries. I would like to, at this point, thank all of you for joining us during these broadcasts this each Wednesday, as we're on the last broadcast of the year. I'm depending on you to make sure you go out Talk to family members and friends, because we have got to do something to get our children back into those special programs. And I believe that more people would want to graduate from high school knowing that they have a possibility for a long-term job in the future. Rich, you are preparing for a birthday. In behalf of all of our listeners, in behalf of Larkin, Mark, myself, Henry, and all the gang, I want to wish you the very best and stolat. Because you're really a great guy. And when next time you're in Philadelphia, we will have to celebrate your birthday. We'll celebrate Larkin's birthday, my birthday, Henry's birthday. We'll make sure that O'Neill's is well visited. And when Mark gets over here, we're going to go absolutely wild. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you heard by our broadcast today, thanks to our special guest for being here. Larkin, thank you for bringing Bruce here. We will have our broadcast posted up on the internet site. Do check out all of our rebroadcasts and send them around to family members and friends. Go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. In behalf of all of us, as we get together on this last Wednesday of the month, I want to wish you the very best. Stay happy, stay well, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Thank you all. Thanks so much, Larkin, Mark, and Rich.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a great week, guys.